So if you think we're finally about to cross some sort of threshold we have not yet crossed, stick around. It's not what you think. Welcome to episode 40 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and the only man who knows when the Royals top 10 list is coming out, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, the man who co-authored the White Sox comments in the now available 2015 BP annual with me, Mauricio Rubio, and the forever crotchety Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they may find you on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballperspectus.com and thedynastyguru.com on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at baseballperspectus and you can find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, at The Dynasty Guru, and on Twitter, at CD Goldstein. That CD is in Coffee and Dream Goldstein. Ben?
Good. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and at The Dynasty Guru, and you can find me at Twitter, at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. You can find us on Twitter now, on Facebook. You already know you can find us on Twitter. It's the same introduction for 40 shows now. You can also find us on Facebook, and you can ask us questions and tell us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So congrats, everyone. We've made it 40 episodes, which is probably 38 more than we deserve to make it after the pilot. But this is going to be a fun week on Tino because we're going to discuss the much talked about and much commented on expert mock prospect draft and make fun of each other's picks. We're going to discuss Brett's fantasy third base dynasty rankings, and we're going to talk about how to deal with unsavory characters in your leagues. But first, as always, we are going to start out with a cute little segment called Reader Emails. And our first reader email is from Gilbert. Gilbert says, "Hi guys, I'm in a 16-team league with an 8-man minor league roster. Our yearly draft is about to come up in a few weeks, and I must determine if I want to keep my present prospects or throw them back into the pool and draft new minor league players. I'm completely focusing on last year's draft class because this is the first time they are eligible to be picked up in our league, and I'm trying to figure out which one of my current players I should keep and which players I can improve on. My major league roster is fairly young, so proximity to the majors is not that important. I want to add guys with potential superstar ceilings. Also, which players from last year's class do you feel have the biggest potential to become a superstar? Here are my current players: Jorge Alfaro, Garen Caccini, Dalton Pompey, Raimel Tapia, Tyron Taylor, Sean Manaea, Alexander Reyes, and Julio Urias. P.S. Caccini is almost certainly gone unless you guys say otherwise." So this is a pretty diverse group of prospects. I think some of these players we've hit on quite frequently and some we haven't really mentioned on Tino at all. So Craig, take it away. Who would you be keeping from this group and who would you be casting aside?
I mean, given his parameters of wanting superstars, I'd be dumping Tyron Taylor pretty quickly and also Cicchini. I know that probably hurts your heart, but he's not a future superstar. I think you could make a case if you don't want to wait on a guy like Reyes. I mean, it's an 8-man minor league roster. That's a little bit of a long time to wait, and he'll still be in the lower minors come next year. But I do think he has you know, number two starter potential if everything clicks. So those two, Taylor and Cicchini, are the two names I would definitely go with, and that's a third name for his kind of choosing, I suppose. Brett, What do you think?
It's tough without knowing when he picks in the draft. But I would be tempted to say just to cut Chiellini, because unless he has a top pick, say he has a middle of the road pick, then he's going to be picking again at like 24. And it's a deep class, but it's not a deep class at the top. We've talked about that before. So I don't think he's going to get a player who's more valuable than Taylor or Reyes with that second round pick. I mean, the other question is whether he can promote Pompey to his major league roster because he's going to play. But, I mean, 24 or 25, if that's where he's picking, you're looking at maybe hoping someone like a Derek Fisher falls, or else you're maybe taking a high upside arm like Luis Ortiz or someone like that. But it's not an ideal situation for an 8-man minor league roster.
So just really quickly, so I had pulled up your 2015 Dynasty League signees, mm-hmm. and I would say the names after 24 that interest me more than someone like Taylor include Flaherty, Baldacchin, and even someone like Brent Honeywell or even Amante Harrison. If you want to play the lottery ticket game in terms of superstars, I mean, in terms of fantasy, he has that potential. I don't think it's going to happen. But he definitely is that lottery ticket type. So I understand those are all guys, again, with an 8-man minor league that it's very far away. But if you want to play the flyer game, I think those guys are guys that you have after 24 that are at least interesting.
Yeah, I think in a league that has 16 teams and 8-man minor league roster, you're talking about what, about 130 guys that are owned. Mm-hmm. So those flyers are going to exist all the time. In a 16 team league, I'd probably hold on to Taylor just to see if he can kind of turn into anything over the first, see how his season goes. And then if it doesn't work out, just get rid of him and pick someone else. I mean, it's easy enough to grab guys like Pompey or Taylor or Reyes in a league where there's fewer than 150 prospects rostered. So you don't really need to go for guys like Flaherty or Honeywell, at least in my opinion.
No, that makes sense.
Mal, you have any thoughts?
No, you guys pretty much nailed it. There's probably no case for Chiellini over Taylor then.
Oddly enough, I don't agree with that. But
I'm with Ben on that. I would cut Taylor before Chiellini.
Okay, yeah, because that's the only thing that I was probably maybe thinking about is that if you're going to go the way that Brett suggested, where you just cut one guy, I'd probably cut Taylor ahead of Chiellini, but that's about it.
Well, to me, they're close enough in fantasy value that this is a case where I'd probably start looking at my roster composition. You know, if you only have one option at third base and it's sort of ride or die and you need some depth, I would have absolutely no issue keeping Chiellini over Taylor. If you have several third base options and, you know, you start five outfielders, then sure, keep Taylor. But it's at least a consideration for me.
Yeah, I'd go as far as saying that not only are Taylor and Chiellini close, but I think Reyes is close to both of them as well. So,
yeah, for a very different reason, but yes.
Yes, but an overall value.
Okay.
Well, just one last thing. I guess I would be interested to know if this is, did he specify it's a first year players draft or it's just a draft that he's got going on and he was asking about first year guys? Because as Brett said, with only 130 or so players kept, he should be able to get some interesting guys just out there who are already in the minor leagues that I would assume are more interesting than a guy like Taylor or Chiellini as well. So I would consider those guys on top of just first-year player guys.
Truth.
Indeed. All right, we will now move on to our next question, and our next question is from Doug. And Doug says, Hey Gentlemen and CD Crazy Driver. Great review of Second Baseman. Should I do this trade? 15-team, 5x5 Dynasty, 40-man rosters. I feel I can compete this year, but it is a very strong group of owners. I would get Greinke and Russell Martin. I would give Archie Bradley, Jorge Alfaro, and Jeff Hoffman. Clearly, I'm better this year and next, as all three guys I give up are prospects, but I'm getting two older guys with limited upside while giving away huge upside. Now, does this require a lot of discussion?
This does not require a lot of discussion in my mind. You're getting... he lists his team down there, and if you had actually gone through the list of the names, I would have commended you, because there's some spelling issues down there. But given the construction of his team, even absent of the context of getting the team, like you make this deal, because you're getting Greinke, you're getting Russell Martin for prospects, and the name of the game is to always go for the title, right? Like, he's not in a position, he clearly thinks he's going to be able to compete this year. And he is going to be able to compete this year, and I'd be hard-pressed to find a team that would top him if he pulls this deal off, just considering the rest of the team. But I can't really see the other side of not making this deal. I can't really see the other side of the argument here. Like, it's just, it's something that we've talked about a lot in the past. Like, you go and get the stars. Like, go and get your guys, man. Like, I can't. It's, I don't know. Does anybody dissent here?
No. I think if you're going to go in and try to pick up someone like Greinke, and especially Martin, he says it's a two-catcher league, and his second catcher is AJ Pierzynski, which blows. But these are the types of players you want to give up. You want to give up pitchers and catching prospects. This is, this is where guys are least likely to come back and hurt you. It's not like he's giving up a really strong hitting prospect. I think this deal is a strong one.
I would argue that he doesn't have any catchers right now, because what is Medco?
I was going to talk to you about, is that Mesoraco, maybe?
I think it's Mesoraco.
That's not that close. That's like me on G-Chat.
It's not even close.
Yeah. No. I think we all knew the answer to this one. I just wanted to bring it up because I feel every like six or seven episodes, it's good to throw out a trade offer like this and just remind everyone to not overthink it. I don't know if it's the fact that it's, three versus two that made him balk at this a little bit. I don't know if it's just, top 100 season, and these are three top 100 guys, and that's making him a little balky, but I mean, there's a solid argument to be made for doing this trade just for Greinke. So add Martin in, and it's not it's not close. I mean, he's clearly winning the trade by a fair margin.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting when people end something like this where it says like, I'm giving away huge upside. I mean, yeah, but what are you getting? You're getting huge upside. I mean, that's Greinke. Greinke alone, his upside as a pitcher is tremendous. I mean, the bottom line is he's likely to fill it because that's what he's done in recent memory. But like, it's not like you're not getting a huge amount with it. Like, I don't think you're giving away much more upside than in terms of like the production you're receiving. So I always think it's interesting how that's phrased, because they're younger guys or because they aren't proven. It's like, oh, I might give away something that's just like there's so much potential there, but you're receiving high quality realized potential.
Right. And players who aren't terribly old. I mean, it's not like you're going to be scrambling for a replacement for these guys in 2016.
Right. Exactly. That's a great point.
Martin has a throw-in is pretty funny.
What'd you say?
Martin has a throw-in is pretty funny. That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was conclusive. So we can move on to our next question from Avery, who begins his email by saying, "My name is Avery. I have the 3rd and 8th overall pick in my Dynasty League's first-year player draft, and if he falls to me, I plan on taking Rodon because of his ETA to the majors. I have thought about taking Alex Jackson with my 8th pick if he falls to me, but I am unsure since he seems far away from the majors. So, my question is, what players from the 2014 draft class have the potential to move quickly through the minors? Thanks." So, Brett, I don't really know if you need to discuss Rodon and Jackson in any great depth. I think people know that Rodon is maybe the best bet of anyone in that draft class to reach the majors first. And we just talked either, I think, 2 weeks ago about how Jackson's probably going to take a little while. But take this question in terms of the second part about other players who have the potential to move quickly. What are some names who come to mind for you?
If you want to stick on the pitching side, I mean, the name that jumps out is Aaron Nola. We've talked about him before. He's a very strong pitching prospect. He doesn't have ace upside, but he should see the majors in 2015, and he projects to be a pretty solid SP3 in time if the whole package works. That's really your only option as far as pitchers go, it depends how you feel about Brandon Finnegan. If you think Brandon Finnegan can start, then he sort of falls into that category of guys you could take at eight. But if you're not so sure, or if you can't really deal with that much bullpen risk, you might want to stay away from him at that point. The other names I'll throw out real quick. Michael Conforto, I have lower down, but he's certainly a batter who should move relatively quickly through the Mets system. I would not be surprised if he was seeing action in left field for the Mets in 2016. And there's really no one that, I mean, Brad Zimmer is a good college bat. So is Trey Turner. I don't think either of them are going to be particularly fast movers for a college bat. Turner, it's unfortunate. He's the player to be named later in the trade from earlier this off season, as he's likely not going to play in any minor league games until June. But the one guy who I will throw out, and if international players are available in this draft, if you're really looking for someone who can contribute now, and he signs before your draft, Hector Oliveira is a really interesting name to keep in the back of your mind. He's a 29-year-old second baseman from Cuba who has some injury history, but it has a really strong bat, and there's a potential he could sign in the next month or two. So it may very well not happen before your draft, but the value would be close enough that if you really wanted someone near term, you could pop him at eight. Craig, do you have any thoughts?
I think Oliveira is a good name to mention in that sense. I should also mention that like his injury history isn't like he messed up his ankle or something like that. He had like a blood disorder. Yeah, that. So like if it recurs, he obviously could be out a long time. But if it doesn't, like if he can manage it, he should be just fine health wise. So it's not a normal injury. I guess I would also wonder it depends on his definition of what fast moving is. I would say that, I mean, someone like Grant Holmes is, I think, will move relatively quickly because he's a fairly polished product, but he's a high schooler. And so, I mean, I would think it's at least 3 years, if not more, but again, that's not bad for a prep product. I was going to mention Zimmer as well, and I obviously think Finnegan can pitch, and he's already pitched at the major league level, so I think that's an easy one. I think there are other names that can move quickly, but not that are worth tabbing at that pick. So it's a little complicated at third and eighth. Like there aren't that many that fit in those spots. So Ben, do you have anything else to add or?
No, the last thing you said was going to be the crux of my answer. Was that, I mean, to me, once you get past Conforto, there's no one worth taking where ETA could possibly outweigh the upside you're overlooking. So for me, Conforto is that line. If you are really all in for 2016 and you want to take Conforto, okay. But you don't want to be reaching for Zimmer, who might not be playing. You don't want to be reaching for someone like Sean Newcomb, who I could see getting playing time at the end of 2016, but who's really going to be a back-end fantasy starter. Just take the value and work on turning that value into something you can use in short order.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the best point to me here, is that like what I wouldn't prioritize ETH to the majors this much. I mean, it's part of someone's value, but let the overall value work out, which is why, you know, like Brett factors that into his Dynasty League rankings for these things. We all kind of do in our analysis, but it's part of the package that we include in their value. And so I mean, like you're talking about Conforto in 2016. I don't think that's any sort of a given. And he's also probably not going to be productive, even, you know, like extremely productive in that time. So like if you're looking at guys in terms of ETA to the majors in the next couple years, I think you're out of luck almost entirely, unless you can get one of the Cuban players.
Or someone
like Jung Kang or something like that.
Just to clarify my point. I mean, even if I thought I was the best team in the league and needed to bolster my major league roster, you could not pay me to take Conforto over Alex Jackson. You take Alex Jackson and you trade him if you have to, but you take him because he's the best player.
Yes. Yes, it's exactly what Ben said at the end before I cut him off, which is take the best value there and then trade him for a major league piece if that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
How far back is Trey Turner's? Brett, were you expecting Turner? When were you expecting Turner up?
I think it was, I don't think it was added to the question that he could have been a 2016 guy. I think it's less likely now because he's going to miss some development time, but 2017 is probably realistic.
Yeah, neutral party. I think that sounds right. All right, can we go on to my favorite question of the week? Actually, my favorite question in a few weeks.
Yes.
So this had me from the subject line alone, because the subject line of this email is asshole rankings. But it is not what you think. So if you think we're finally about to cross some sort of threshold we have not yet crossed, stick around. It's not what you think. Hey, Brett and the Double Down Dog boys. Could you please rank your top 3 to 5 asshole traits? Stay. I'm talking about the sort of things that bug everyone else in the league, but aren't flagrant rule violations and aren't enough to kick someone out over. On the off chance that anyone listening to this podcast is an asshole, maybe they'll learn something and change their ways. For reference, my top 5 asshole traits would be bullying or harassment, putting players on the trade block, then declining or ignoring offers without response or comment, emailing or messaging the entire league with comments for the commissioner, proposing wildly unbalanced trade offers and refusing to negotiate, complaining about the league or people in the league outside of a private league space, i.e. social media, or in a passive-aggressive vague email to popular fantasy podcasts. Also, if Javier Baez were an asshole, where would he appear on your list? Finally, do you have any advice on how commissioners can deal with assholes, jerks, and frosted dicks? With unending love and gratitude, Tyler. Tyler, with this email, I am promoting you to friend of the podcast status. I don't know if this is your first email to us or if you've had several, but whenever I see this email address come across, you are now joining the ranks of, I think, Dave and Rotolando as official friend of the podcast for Tino. So I'm going to rank some assholes, and then I'm going to let you guys go. For me, my number one asshole in this instance only, and asshole preference is, you know, it's based on contextual factors. But right now, the number one thing that I hate the most out of these options would be proposing wildly unbalanced trade offers and refusing to negotiate. I hate that. That drives me crazy. 2 would probably be putting players on the trade block, then declining or ignoring offers, because it's sort of the less offensive bastard child of the first one. 3 would be bullying or harassment, but I'm not really sure how you can bully or harass someone in a fantasy league. Can't you just like turn off notifications or something? So that doesn't bother me. But
what if you only demand to talk trade by phone?
Oh, wow. Well, number four is complaining about the league or people in the league outside of private league space, Craig. That's the number four type of asshole. And then five would be emailing or messaging the entire league with comments for the commissioner, unless I was the commissioner, at which point that would be number one. And I would probably rank Baez. He's more of a taint than an asshole to me. He doesn't play the position, so I'm going to skip over it. Brett, do you either want to rank this, or do you want to just answer about how you deal with guys like this as commissioner, other than recruit them to write for you?
Well, I'm gonna throw out two additional types of two additional asshole traits that I particularly appreciate.
I know one of these already.
All right, Brett, just toss those assholes out.
Well, one's the obvious one, which I was surprised not to see on Tyler's list, which is a guy who sends trade offer and then rescinds trade offer 2 minutes later. There's like two of those in every league. It's annoying. It's super annoying. Then the other guy is a guy who puts up all of his worst players on the trade block and then constantly updates it.
Wow. So Brett is apparently also someone who complains about the league or people on the league outside of a private league space.
I thought this was a safe space.
It is a safe space. I hope TDGX people listen to us because. So something similar to what you just said, all your bad players is one thing. I was gonna say
your whole team.
I like people who put the entire roster on the trade block.
That was my thing.
Just come and get me. All right. Yeah. Sounds good. Yep. Mal, I'm curious about your taste in this.
I think I am not about the passive aggressive stuff, so five is pretty high, but I think number one for me is something that's probably related to one of these, but a little bit off the board. A guy who accepts trade and then emails you later about it, saying that he wants to decline it because he was drunk when he made the trade. I think that's definitely number one for me. Yeah. No, I got you, Brett. I got you. And then, I think I'm going to go with passive aggressive there. And then the wildly unbalanced and quite frequent trade offers is number three. And it flips with number two quite often. But those are my top three.
Strong choices.
Craig, you're something of a subject matter expert.
I don't know. I mean, these are all good options. I would also throw in like the way people negotiate trades often leaves me just infuriated. And that's like when someone emails you and you're like, hey, would you be interested in making a deal? And you're like, yeah, sure. I mean, make me an offer. You know, it's interesting. And they're like, well, what were you kind of thinking? And like they start the trade negotiation, but also refuse to make an offer. They won't do it. You're like, well, we'll just throw something out there and we'll talk about it. We'll go back and forth. And they're like, yeah, no, why don't you look at my roster and tell me what you think?
And it's I know. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. And yeah, I don't have the goddamn time to search your roster when you contact me about a trade. So do your fucking homework and get back to me.
Yeah, damn. Or it's just like literally you can make me a bad offer and I'll just tell you no, that's not close for me. And then we can realize we value players differently. But like don't do the like, no, what are you thinking? It's almost like deciding to go to dinner with someone who can't like figure out what they want. You're like, they're like, no, what do you want? And you're like, man, I asked you. I don't know. Just decide.
Do something. It's like that scenario, but after you've already ordered.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's one of my least favorite things. That's a top asshole trait to me.
Indeed. Do you think Enya has any top asshole traits? Welcome back to episode 40 of Tino. I hope you used that break to think about some of the less savory traits of some of your league mates and how you will deal with them in a positive and constructive manner moving forward. This week, we are onward and upward with our positional series, and now it is third base's turn. So as you guys know, the Dynasty League lists are just part of a pretty comprehensive positional series we have going on at BP, at which every list every position is flushed out with some pretty comprehensive rankings, for 2015, three-year rankings, Dynasty League rankings, AL and NL only league rankings, a get-to-know piece that tells you about prospects, sort of a lay of the land piece. We're really going all out, and it's been a great time in the comments so far, so keep them coming. But Brett, seeing as how this is your baby, I will pass you the keys, and you may speak to us about the hot corner.
Will do. So there's a top 50 list up like the rest of the positions we've covered so far. This one is another list that gets awfully weak towards the end, but it has some rather exciting names at the beginning. So let's start at the beginning as we always do. Does anyone disagree with Josh Donaldson being the top guy here?
Great value pick.
Indeed.
I think, I for one like him and the value that he provides.
Would you select him multiple times as a value pick?
If I could.
Yeah.
So all right. So if that's the consensus, the next two guys are the young guys, and two is Manny Machado, and three is Chris Bryant. The Chris Bryant ranking looks crazy for someone who has not played in the majors yet. Ben, is it crazy?
No, I have that same initial reaction, but then I look at the names under and I'm just not as impressed with those names. I think you could make an argument that he should be five, but that's really as low as he can possibly go for me. And I don't think having him at three is crazy. I think maybe at some point someone should do sort of like a comparison of Machado and Bryant as their back-to-back. That seems interesting to me.
Could be. Maybe we should think about that for next year.
Indeed.
Would any of you take Bryant over Machado at this point? I mean, Machado is a guy who I really like from a long-term perspective. He's still younger than Chris Bryant, and he, you know, obviously he has the knee issues, which are clearly a red flag, but he has played in the majors for quite a while and put up strong offensive numbers. Craig, who would you rather have if you were forced with the option of taking one of the two?
I would probably take Bryant, if I'm being honest. I love Machado, and I say that, and I make that choice kind of because we're being forced, you said, forced to pick between the two. I understand that there's a case for either, and I recognize that there's a lot more downside to Bryant than kind of conventionally gets displayed. He does swing and miss a lot, and that could approach a dangerous territory if he doesn't kind of hold at where he's at. I think he was at 27% at AAA, and it was his first go around there, and I expect that he could bring it down over a full season as opposed to a half a season and all of that good stuff. But I do think it's not like a given to me that he'll hit 280 with 30 plus homers. I do think that, I mean, we don't know what Machado's kind of output is going to be like power wise, and he's more of a doubles guy than a home runs guy. I'd rather have Bryant and all the RBI that are going to come with hitting more towards the middle of the lineup. I think Machado's a tremendous talent, but given his health issues and the fact, I mean, I don't know that he's more than a 20 homer bat, even at maturity. I think he certainly could be, but I don't know that he is. And so I'd rather go with the guy I think can hit for more power, and that's Bryant.
Sounds good. So let's go down a little bit further. We'll kind of look at the next group, the next two tiers, as one large group, since there's, you know, you could make a reasonable case for any of them, depending on how you feel about the guys at the top. But In this 4-9 group, before we start getting into the other prospects, Mal, who's the one guy who you would feel least comfortable owning for the next couple of for the long term? Who's the guy that makes you least comfortable?
I think it's definitely Chris Davis. It's a guy who you snuck in at 9. I know there's, you know, a lot of recency bias in play here, but the 191 average scares me. I think the overall player profile kind of scares me as well. You know, he was a late bloomer. He's not a third baseman. He's not going to be a third baseman moving forward. There's a lot of swing and miss, and there's a ton of risk there. Even though he's been someone who has produced in the past, I think out of this list, if I ended up getting Chris Davis from this group of players, I'm not very excited about it.
Ben, same question.
Strong agree. I mean, I want to give a different answer for the sake of diversity, but to me, Davis is the one who clearly, no shots fired. I'm not sure he belongs in this tier.
All right. Craig, same answer.
Yeah, I guess so. I think that makes the most sense. I think there's a case to be made. I mean, I obviously made this case in my tiers rankings, and I know you agree in terms of David Wright. I think he'll bounce back, but you know, we don't know what the shoulder situation is, and if he doesn't come back from that, he might be less useful than everyone else in this kind of grouping, that the 4-9 rankings that you're talking about. But I, you know, that's like an extremely medically based answer. But it is a concern, I think.
Okay. So then this leads to the next question. After this tier, you get the two big, non-Chris Bryant power prospects in Miguel Sano and Joey Gallo. Would you guys have listed them above Chris Davis? I guess we'll go with Ben first.
That is a brutal question. I think I might, because like Mao said, Davis isn't a third baseman. So I think the fact that he's likely to be confined to first base, coupled with his recent struggles, it's super close to me, but I'm not comfortable with this. Yeah, I think I probably would take them over Davis.
All right.
I would as well. You know, this is kind of the, because he could come out and hit for that low average 30-40 home run power this year and just make us all look silly, but I really believe in what Sano and Gallo can both provide at the major league level. I know Gallo's pretty far away, but I think at this point, just considering where the needles are moving and kind of where they're moving on the defensive spectrum, I probably would, but it is pretty tight.
I'll split the difference and say I would take Sano ahead of Davis, but I'll take Davis ahead of Gallo.
Boo.
I think you make a good point that he's not a third baseman, but you still get him at first base, and I think he'll still hit pretty well, or significantly better than he did last year. So I still love Sano. I think he can stay at third. I think Joey Gallo could stay at third, but he plays on the same team as Adrian Beltre, and he might get broken in the outfield, and I'm not sure how many guys kind of end up doing what Nick Castellanos did, which is, you know, go to the outfield for a year and then come back to third base and do it well, which is not something Castellanos did anyway. So I also kind of factor in that Gallo might be an outfielder when it's all said and done. Although, like I said, I think he has the tools to play third for sure. That's just a team need type of thing.
Yeah. So next question, moving down, and we'll start jumping around a little bit more after this. Todd Frazier had an awesome 2014 season, yet he doesn't crack the top 10 here. Would any of you guys say that Frazier is being sold short with this ranking, or does this feel about right to you? Let's start with Craig.
I think it all kind of depends on whether you think he's going to run. And it doesn't even have to be 20 stolen bases. If you think he's a 15 stolen base guy, I think you probably think he's being sold short. If you think he's more of a eight to 10 guy, you're probably fine with it. And I guess I'm more of the latter. He ran in the minors. He stole 15 or 14 bases in 2010 and 17 in 2011. But before last year in the majors, he stole one base, three bases, six bases, and then last year he jumped to 20. He's clearly has the ability to do it, and the Reds like to run. Brian Price likes to run, but he was, you know, he was 20 of 28, which isn't exactly spectacular. And so I don't know if they'll want him to run as much going forward if he can't be successful on a more consistent basis. And that being the case, I think he's probably more of, like I said, an 8 to 10 guy going forward than a 15 to 20 guy. Ben?
Yeah, I agree with you. I tend to look at his 2014 and sort of reduce everything by like 10 to 15%. I think that's the player he is, but with a more dramatic drop in steals than that. So I think this is fine for him, because I acknowledge that dropping someone 10 to 15% is a little harsh. It's okay. I mean, I just think 12 through 16 here, this is definitely like a tier for me. This is the correct tier. And where you rank them in that 12 to 16 range, I think is fine for me. I can't really go to war for any of these guys.
Yeah, I think it's actually, like you guys said, I think it's pretty accurate and pretty strong. So I think, you know, you have to buy into the average as well if you really want to put him in the top 10. So, you know, I like him, but I think this is fine.
All right. So we start moving down into the more prospect heavy and less attractive major league player territory. So who's someone in sort of there's a tier starting at 14 with Ryan Zimmerman, and then you get prospects like Michael Franco and DJ Peterson. And there's a large tier in the 20s. That's a nice mix of prospects and guys that you're just not quite happy enough to have as your starting third baseman, unless you love Aramis Ramirez, and I love Aramis Ramirez. So who would be someone in this 14 to sort of 29 range that you would be buying, whose stock is going to be a bit higher than this next year? Mal?
I'm going to go with Brandon Drury. I think that's a guy that we saw a lot of we saw him in the Arizona Fall League, and I came away pretty impressed with what he can do. I think he can hit enough to kind of increase his stock over the coming year. I think he can be a riser, especially in that system. So I think I'm going to buy Drury. Ben?
That's an interesting name. I think I'm going to buy Headley in this tier. I think he's going to be pretty good for a few years, and I don't worry about 6 or 7 years down the line in dynasty leagues. I think in, you know, 2 to 4 year increments, and I think Headley is going to be pretty good for the next 3 years. So I would certainly take him over Castellanos, who I still think is going to be decent, but I Headley in Yankee Stadium is too good for me to pass up. Craig?
I'll take Castellanos. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to add power over the next few years. I don't necessarily think it'll be like an ascent that continues, you know, without breaking. I think he's going to take some lumps here and there, especially because he puts the ball in play a decent amount and is going to be subject to things like BABIP. But I do think he can start putting some more balls over the fence, and he's someone I'm still buying on. I would also just throw out, I mean, Carlos Santana, I think, is, I mean, based on pure numbers. If I guess I want to ask Brett, kind of, if Santana was going to stay at third base, where would you have him ranked? Like, if he was just going to stay third base eligible for the next 5 years, where would you rank him?
I'd have him up near Frazier, up right behind Sano and Gallo, probably about 3 to 4 spots higher.
Okay. And the reason I ask is because obviously his average was horrible this year, but he's generally a better player than a 230 guy. And it was really just the first, I think, 8 to 10 weeks of the season were just absolutely brutal for him.
When he was playing third base.
Right. Correct. But outside of that, like in terms of the stuff he could control, outside of the batting average, he kind of put up a Donaldson season in terms of home runs and obviously not the contextual stats. He only had 68 runs, that type of thing. But 27 home runs from third base is a huge deal. It's the second time he's done it. Obviously, I wouldn't necessarily predict him for it going forward. But I just think he's an interesting name that if he somehow continues to hold third base eligibility, I'd probably have him in my top 10.
Yep.
Is what I would say, and I might have him in my top 5
if
we knew he was holding on to third base eligibility. Just on his offensive ability alone, I'd probably have him in my top 5.
So I won't go top 5, Craig, but I'm looking at either right before or right after Nolan Arenado, before Chris Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That's like an easy spot for me to drop him in.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it's an interesting thing because I don't know where he's going to end up being eligible, but and I know it was an awful year last year, but he's someone I'd be buying on.
And Lonnie Chisenhall is not good, as we may speak about later. So it's not crazy to think he does regain third base eligibility.
Yeah, right. But he's also really, really bad there.
This is true.
So in the interest of answering my own question, I will take Rafael Devers here, who I really, really like his potential, and I think he's going to continue to get hype as he moves up the system. I think that he's a guy who could pretty realistically end up as a top, 15 to 20 overall prospect in another year or two, with a strong showing in full season ball. So we pretty much took most of the prospects there. But moving a little further down, Ben, I will let you talk about Garin Cecchini just for 15 seconds.
Sure.
Before we move on, why should people not forget about him?
Having him behind Moustakas and Freeze is I feel like I've done something wrong, and that you are perhaps punishing me in front of people. Chastising me, like when a kid throws a temper tantrum in a store and the parents just make him drop the candy and pick him up and carry him out of the store screaming. That's what I want to do when I see Cecchini behind Moustakas and Freeze. He's not a star, obviously. I think he's a better MLB prospect than he is a fantasy prospect, but I still believe he can hit. And I'm sorry, 3 months of so-so production. No, let's call a spade a spade. 3 months of crappy, of nothing in AAA. Don't convince me that he can't hit, because he's hit absolutely everywhere else, and he hit well in AAA at the beginning and end of last season. So I get he's not a star. I think even with a really good 2014, he probably would have ranked, I don't know, right like above Trevor Plouffe. So it's not a huge jump, but he can hit. I mean, I don't think he's going to hit for big power, but I think he's routinely going to hit 280 or better. I do think he'll get to double-digit power. I think he's going to steal a few bases early in his career. And I think he's a third baseman. So it's not a super sexy package, but I prefer him to probably everyone from Devers on.
It's a shame that we had to reject better real life prospect than fantasy prospect as a podcast title.
Doesn't flow very well.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't acronym very well either.
No.
I'll kind of ask this of everyone instead of going down the rest of the list, because the rest of the list gets really bleak. From sort of the 30s and 40s, who is one guy who you guys have your eye on as someone who either has more potential than they've shown, or someone who has the upside to kind of sneak into the top 30 in somewhat short order here. We'll start with Mal.
I guess this is, there's a couple of guys here. Man, I remember that Mike Ult train. But no, I'm gonna go with Rio Ruiz. The profile isn't overly sexy, and I'm pretty much the high man on Ruiz. I accept that. But I think that there's an interesting prospect in there, and I think there's enough potential that I think he can be usable in fantasy leagues, which is saying a lot more than some of the other names down here. But, I think Rio Ruiz is going to be my guy. Greg?
I would take, let's see, who would I take? I will take Alex Rodriguez. I think Alex Rodriguez is going to spite everyone and hit 25 home runs this year and make the Yankees pay him monies for his milestone home run achievement. It's all about Alex Rodriguez. I'm so glad he's back.
You would take Alex Rodriguez.
I would. Also,
you're going to root for Alex Rodriguez, aren't you?
Oh, I'm 100% rooting for Alex Rodriguez. I hope he does a celebration where he flips his bat and then does the face he made when he tried to kiss the mirror in that photo.
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, if he did that, I might have to root for him.
Yeah. But
he totally lacks the self-awareness to do that.
He's working out with Barry Bonds, man. It's going to happen.
Oh, that's not going to be fun.
Can we bring Barry back instead?
I said if the baseball wants to solve the offense issue, they should bring Barry back. That was my solution.
It's not a bad point.
So you're predicting 25 home runs for A-Rod?
I'm 25 homers. He's going to do it.
I'm a fan. By the way, this list is not good down here.
No, it's bad in the names on it. They're not strong.
No. This is like not fun. This is not a fun assignment.
No. You know who's not going to be in the top 30 next year? Will Middlebrooks. Not going to be in the top 30. He and Mike Ault are going to be hanging out, providing power for a city by swinging and missing somewhere. Crushing my dreams simultaneously.
Oh, man.
Brock Holt, yeah, though.
I've got nothing down here.
Yeah, there's like not good stuff.
Free Brock Holt down there at 48.
Is, I forget because I can't keep our third base ranking straight. Travis Demerit's not on the list. I mean, he'd be someone I guess I'd be interested in, kinda.
Yeah.
He could also power a city with his swinging and missing. But
I keep forgetting that Kyle Kubica is an actual person.
He's not an actual third baseman, if that helps.
That does help, yeah.
Yeah.
Connor Gillespie's got to be real salty if he sees this list, huh?
He should be salty because they spelled his first name wrong anyway.
Yeah, it's the wrong spelling on Connor.
It's a
Connor
bad spelling.
With one N? What is that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good. No one here is going to say it's good.
Yeah.
It's better. I thought Brett might go for the one-letter spelling of a normal double-letter name.
Okay.
Connor is just a weak name to start with. So
strong agree.
Yeah, it's a bad name.
Strong agree.
What's worse, this spelling of Connor or Connor with an A?
Oh, what? God.
How do you spell Connor with
Does
an
that
A?
Exist?
Yeah. Connnar.
That's
no,
worse. That's worse. That's worse.
I don't like that.
That's really that bad.
I will say, having a Yan Gervis and a Tequan helps. Those are two solid names.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out, and I like the old school stylings of Gilbert.
Gilbert was,
Gilbert,
that was strong. I didn't comment on it because I figure he probably gets that all the time because his goddamn name is Gilbert, but it's it's an old name. I
like it.
Yeah.
All right, should we talk about something a little less depressing than 30 through 50 on this list?
Yeah, yes, please.
Okay, excellent. Let us move on then to the third annual BP Expert Mock Prospect Draft, which was organized by Brett 3 years ago, because this is the third annual one, and features some of the internet and Twitter's leading minor league fantasy prospect personalities. So you know you're in rarefied air if you are part of this draft. So we have people like that, but then somehow we also have Jim Callis, we have Chris Crawford, we have Eno Saris, we have DJ Short. So it's a pretty impressive list of participants, and you can go on baseballperspectives.com and see the full list. And then you also have me, Brett, Craig, our colleague Nick Schlein. Mao did not get to join in on the fun since he has absconded and gone over to the dark side that is the BP Prospect team. So I will just real quick go over. There's 15 people, so it's 150 players selected. We did a snake draft. Brett picked 8th overall. I picked 11th. Craig picked 14th. Mao, I don't know if you heard Brett throw the keys back to me, but he did, but I was just keeping them warm for you. So now I'm going to give you the keys for the first time in many an episode, and why don't you walk us through?
Okay. Now, the order in picks, I'm just going to go ahead and go in order for a little bit, but it's going to go Brett, Ben, and then Craig. So the first question that I have for Brett, you mentioned in your write-up that it was going to be a very tough call between Sano and Syndergaard. Who would you have taken?
Sano.
Why?
Because he's a hitter. Not to make it too not to dilute it too much, but I believe in Sano's power, and I think it's real, and I think it is spectacular. And Syndergaard is my top fantasy pitching prospect in the minors, but Sano sits above that line for me. That line being where you put the first pitcher in your dynasty prospect rankings.
All right. Ben, you ended up taking Lucas Giolito, which is out of profile for you. Were there any other hitters that you were considering taking here? What was the thought process like there?
Yeah, I considered Jock Peterson, who went after Giolito by one pick. And I also considered Francisco Lindor, but I knew that would be a little bit of a reach. I love where Craig got him at the beginning of round two, but it would have been a little early here. I don't love taking pitchers first, but 2 years ago when we did this draft, I took Gerrit Cole first and Javier Baez second, and that worked out okay. So you just have to go with upside, with best player available. And, you know, all things being equal, like Brett just said, you want a hitter, but I couldn't pass up Giolito at 11.
Did you consider Rusney Castillo at all?
Not here. I might have considered him if he had been there for my second pick, which would have been 19th overall, but even then, probably not. I don't really know if I have Rusney as a top 20 guy.
All right. Craig, I guess the same question, even though I know it's not incredibly out of profile. Who are the other guys that you were thinking about when you took Urias at 14 overall?
Honestly, the other guys I was thinking about were, I considered taking Lindor in the same spot. And I didn't really love my options here. None of them felt like great value. All of them seemed like reasonable picks kind of towards the beginning of the middle of the second round. So I guess I was potentially considering someone like Carlos Rodon, because I think he can pitch in the majors relatively shortly. David Dahl went the pick after Urias, and I considered him, although I thought, you know, he's also far away for a bat. Those are the kind of the guys I was thinking about. I was really kind of hoping someone like Peterson or Castillo would fall to me at 14, and didn't love my value on Urias, but felt it was kind of the way to go to start building my farm.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and go to round two here. How good is Francisco Lindor going to be in fantasy?
I think he's relatively underrated, and that's kind of what I said. He gets the better in real life than he is in fantasy tag a lot, and that is undoubtedly true because he's got a special glove. but he's going to play a lot. He's a really heady player, and he makes a lot of hard contact for a minor leaguer. I know that doesn't show up in his slugging percentage, but he's been really young for his level, and I think he's still kind of maturing physically. I don't think that means he's going to add a ton of height or weight, but I think he could become a little more solid. He actually runs pretty well, and I think his instincts can help him on the base paths. I think he can be a 10, you know, a low double digits home run guy, maybe an 8-12 home run guy. And if he is that, if he can hit around 10, steal 15 or 20, and hit in the 270s, 280s, that's a really useful player. It's not a dominant player at the position, but it's someone who you can plug into your lineup, you know, and do a set it and forget it type thing, which is pretty valuable. And doing it at shortstop is huge.
Okay. Last question for you, Craig. How do you rank your first two rounds? Are you happy with it? Are you not happy with it? What did you think about them?
I mean, I think I kind of, you know, lemonade out of lemons. I'm not unhappy with the two players, but it's again, something that I didn't love the value of where I got these guys. I would have loved Lindor kind of in Ben's spot maybe, or you know, pick behind him in the second round. I know it's just three or four picks, but it kind of does make a difference. So I wasn't thrilled with the value I got, but I thought they were fine selections given who else was available.
Great, thank you, Ben. You ended up taking Archie Bradley here. The pitchers that were taken after him were Rodon, Glasnow, and Bundy. Were any of those guys in consideration for your pick, or was it pretty much going to be Bradley all the way?
I really like Rodon. I considered him, is fair to say, but I still do have Bradley as the more attractive arm. And he's really close, which also appealed to me after taking Giolito. So, yeah, I mean, Bradley and Rodon are right there. No, I did not consider taking Glasnow or Bundy. I wanted to take a hitter here, obviously, but, you know, the next hitter who went after Bradley was Mazzara at 25. And Craig, please don't shoot me, but that's a rich spot for Mazzara for my taste. So there just really wasn't a hitter here for me to take. So I did what I did in the first round, and I went with the highest upside arm available.
So you think Archie Bradley is a starter?
I do think Archie Bradley is a starter.
And how do you think you did in your first two rounds?
What Craig said, I mean, I don't think anyone plans to leave one of these with two pitchers, but, you know, we gotta practice what you preach, and every week we're on here telling people to take the value. So I took the value.
Cool. Thank you. Brett, you took Dylan Bundy. Was anybody else in the mix here? Were you thinking about anybody else, or is this kind of your guy?
No, I was. And the other guy I was thinking about almost lasted until my next pick, but I got sniped right before him. It was Tim Anderson. I mean, if Bundy's not there, if Bundy goes where Glasnow goes, I take Tim Anderson here at 23. But Bundy's too good of value. He's, you know, even with Tommy John, he should be in the majors this year. He is just an extremely talented pitcher from a stuff perspective and from a command profile. It's a package that gets hampered down by the Tommy John, but it shouldn't really all that much. And I think this is a very strong value for where he is. I mean, I have him within the top 15 in my Dynasty 101. And getting him here is a bargain for me.
All right. And how do you think you did in the first two rounds?
I was happy. I mean, you just like Ben said, you never go in expecting to take two pitchers. You never go in expecting to take two guys who pretty much missed the entire last season with Tommy John surgery. But, you know, the value is what the value is. And that's where you go. That's where I went.
Follow-up question. Are you ever unhappy?
I was unhappy with my next pick. Not with my next pick. I was unhappy around the circumstances of my next pick.
Okay, outside of Tim Anderson, was there anybody in the first two rounds that you got sniped on that you were really upset about?
In the first two rounds? Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no. I thought I was going to get Corey Seager at 8, but he went up at 5. And that, I guess, shouldn't have surprised me very much, but I mentally was preparing to get him at 8.
Yeah, I apologize. Tim Anderson was round 3. My bad. Ben, what about you? Anybody in the first 2 rounds?
I would have really liked it if Chris Bryant fell to me at 11 and Byron Buxton fell to me at 20. That would have been really cute. That's what I was hoping for, but didn't work out.
No, just missed. No. Just nope. Missed. What about you, Craig? Is Craig here?
That's how distraught Craig is.
He's gone.
What?
Help.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now.
Yep. Okay, sorry. I was going to say, I was rooting for Josh Donaldson as a value pick, first of all, but it just didn't work out.
Such an asshole.
It didn't play out that way, you know?
Actually, I don't care for this bit, Craig. I'm gonna just.
Sorry. Let me come up with another one for you.
Yeah, I'm just gonna tweet this about you real quick.
So, you guys have the whole draft in front of you. Whose draft did you really like overall?
Who are you asking?
I loved my draft. I think I did a phenomenal job.
Did you?
I do. I do.
What about you, Brett? Who's your favorite draft?
I need to pull up the sheet, but I mean, from looking at it the other day, I really like James Anderson's team from RotoWire. He has a couple of guys, and not just because he sniped me on Anderson. He's got up and down the board. He's got guys that I like. I thought he got really good value on a couple of pitchers later, like Braden Shipley and Sean Manaea. Those were the later round picks, weren't my favorite, but when you get guys like Mazar and Anderson early, you can kind of take some more chances later. The other team that I like, I'll be honest, I really like Craig's team, and I think it's really strong across the board. I mean, we'll get to some of the later picks in following weeks, but he took some guys later on that I really like. I still believe in Alan Hansen to an extent. Jake Thompson's great value, and we both have an affinity for Marcus Molina. But yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone's team was relatively strong. So I mean, with yeah. The anyone else have any answer to that? It's kind of a wide open question.
Yeah, I really liked Brent Hershey's team from Baseball HQ. I think I didn't love kind of his last 2 picks, but they were kind of made with a purpose, and I can get behind that. So just real quick, Hershey got guys like Addison Russell, Dan Norris, Aaron Judge. He got in the 3rd round, who I was desperately hoping would fall to me towards the back end of that 3rd round, and he took him, and I was very jealous. Aaron Sanchez, he got in the 4th round, which, I mean, that's a guy who could be starting games at the major league level and has the talent to miss an absolute ton of bats. And then he got Hunter Dozier in the 5th, who I think is, I think he's getting dinged for his double-A stint, but you know, I think he's still got a lot of talent. He got Lewis Brinson later on, who I absolutely love. He got huge upside in the 8th round in Alex Reyes. I don't know. I really liked his draft overall. I thought he did a really good job.
Cool. All right. Ben, I'm going to give the keys back to you.
All right. Y'all are haters. My team was good.
I liked your team, Ben.
It's too late for that, Brett. It's too late for that nonsense. So you can only see, when you're listening to this, you'll only be able to see either rounds 1 through 4 or 1 through 6, but we will tackle the rest of the draft in next week's Tino and wrap this up all in a neat and tidy bow for you. I guess the last point I want to make here, Jim Callis, obviously a very respected analyst in this business, did not understand taking Enya in the 7th round. Welcome back to episode 40 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes and like us on Facebook. Every rating and every review helps us tremendously, and we love reading your comments too. In terms of burying the lead, the most exciting news of the week is that the BP 2015 annual is now out. I'm really happy with how this book that I authored came out, and you can read some blurbs from my friends Brett, Mao, and Craig too. So order that, take a picture of you and the book, and put that on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Cranky Food Eccentricities Dude Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening. Please buy my book and have a good night.
Are you going to go on tour?
I do know. It's true. And then I'm going to Arizona. Wow, yours is going to be worse than mine.
Yeah, that's why I said yours was better.
Damn, Craig. Craig, I'm not sure we could have run with that one.
No, probably.
Yeah, probably not.